So welcome to the Atom CTO podcast. My name is Bhairav Patel and I'm here with Sam Noble, my fellow co-founder of Atom CTO. Say hello, Sam.
Hello.
And so what we're here to do at Atom CTO is obviously provide virtual CTO, on-demand CTO services to small businesses and startups. And what we thought we'd do is a couple of introductory podcasts which give you the ability to understand a little bit about ourselves, and we can talk a bit about our experiences. So the first one is obviously with Sam, my co-founder. And we're just going to talk a little bit about Sam's experience and the different types of projects he's worked on, and to get to know him a little bit more and the kind of projects he likes to lead. So Sam, tell us a little bit about yourself, a bit your background, you know, your degree, where you came from, and what actually got you interested in IT in the first place.
Yeah, so how do I get into IT? It's a good question. I think I have my father to thank for that. Back in the day, he had this computer called an Oric One. My mother actually got it for his birthday the year I was born. So in 1983, he had this little computer, and you could, you know, type your programs into it and it would do all kinds of funky things. So as I was growing up, this thing was lying around. This was kind of really before mainstream video games. So this was where you would get some entertainment, and it was really cool because you could type some commands in and it would do stuff. So it would show you, you know, fonts in different colors or play sounds. So I used to, you know, sit and spend hours and hours typing away, you know, from a book of code that basically was an entire program. And there were some games inside this book. So I could sit there, write out these games, and then you would have a very simple, you know, Pac-Man style games that you could play. So that was kind of my real introduction into IT and the world of computers. And then after that, you know, Game Boys came around and Super Nintendos. So you saw the kind of the fun side of things. Once I got into school, you start talking to some teachers, and, you know, now in the 90s, you know, we would have a computer in the library and CDs were coming around. So you could share software, you know, not having to mess around with these tiny floppy disks anymore. So as I got more access to these things and you know, this wealth of information and knowledge out there, I started to learn more about what it meant to write code and build software and networking, and it was just fascinating. So it just kind of, I just got sucked into it from there. And it just, yeah, I think coming into A-levels, they had a computer science degree, a computer science course that I went into. Naturally, all of the kind of maths and physics and everything that comes along with this, I was studying that at A-levels and then did the computer science as well. Funnily enough, when I was going to university, I applied to do a degree in photography. I was going to do a Bachelor of Arts in photography at Westminster University, or the University of Westminster, I think it was called. And I think literally just before accepting the offer, I had a change of heart. Thought, I'm not sure I want to go down this path. I'll take a gap year. I'll work for a little bit and figure out what I want to do. And after that, I realized I wanted to go into more of the kind of computer science stuff. So that's when I changed to go to Reading University to do a computer science degree. And the rest is history. After that, graduated with my master's degree, and that was it. I was sucked into the world of IT.
Wow. So that's that was actually quite a big life change, wasn't it? That from photography into IT, that's quite a big one. So where did you get first started? What was your first job?
So that was working for a company called Smith Bays. It was actually a startup out of an incubator in McLaren. So McLaren Formula One, they had an incubator in the Woking headquarters, which is like this kind of James Bond building. Walk in there. And this was after graduating in 2006, this was my very first kind of interview for a job. So I, you know, got called up to this really intimidating, impressive building. I went inside there, had my first interview with a guy called Alan Jones, who absolutely phenomenal guy. I basically sat there for an hour telling him, I have no idea what you're talking about. Like, you know, every question that he came at me with, I just had no idea. Which, you know, prior to walking into this interview, I thought I was God's gift to IT. I knew everything. I knew everything there was to know about computers, having just graduated with my bachelor's and master's. And as it turned out, I knew nothing, to the point where he said, what can I ask you? What? Give me some questions that I can ask you and what we can talk about. So then we started talking about artificial neural networks and 3D computer graphics and all of this stuff. And yeah, amazingly, they gave me the job. Hey, actually, after Alan called me up to come back in for a second chat, because the interview had gone so badly, I called him back to say, are you calling me back for a second interview, or are you calling me back to tell me I didn't get the job? He's like, what? We're calling you back for a second interview, fool. Oh, okay, fine. So yeah, that was my first experience in the world of work.
That's interesting, actually, because it goes to show that even bad interviews can lead to positions, right? Don't stress too much about the performance. I guess there you were honest, right? That was the most important thing.
Absolutely, yeah. Just don't try and bullshit. I mean, you know, working with pros like this, Alan was he'd been quite a prolific author before this. He'd pretty well known in the Java world and the Microsoft world. There's no way you could, you know, try and slip anything by him. He would report it out straight away. So I was just honest, and I have no idea what you're talking about. But I think it's usually one of those things, right? When you're in an exam, if you think the exam went terrible, generally you did okay in it. If you think it went awesome, then you probably didn't do so great in it. So you never know. No matter how bad you think it is, don't give up.
So after Smith Bays, I mean, what kind of stuff were you doing at Smith Bays, actually?
So there, actually, one of the reasons why I got that job was because I had done quite a bit of development, mostly my own time, with Ball and Delphi. So Pascal, Ball and Delphi were the creators of Object Pascal. So Borland, the company, they had this product suite where you could do very similar to like Visual Basic, drag and drop UI components with some code behind it. And the code behind it was in Pascal, which I did quite a lot of in college and not so much in university, but I'd had some exposure. And they basically wanted to take an existing software that was written by a bunch of the McLaren engineers. So you had physicists writing Pascal code that had created this proof of concept that they now wanted to port across the .NET. And at this time in 2006, a brand new technology called WPF, which was still in its beta or alpha phase, I think, actually. We were part of the technology access preview program with Microsoft. So the first job was to come in and maintain this Ball and Delphi application written in Pascal, and then to port that across to the .NET.
Right. So then you went from, where did you go from Smith Bays? What was the next job that you undertook?
So I was there at Smith Bays. I stayed there for a couple of years. So in 2008, left there. Then I pretty much went straight into the world of freelancing after that. So I'd done this job working with an amazing guy called Sam Borton, who is now the CTO of Quantum Black, a London-based consultancy with a big focus on data science. And, you know, I just learned so much from working with him and Alan Jones and the rest of the guys there. And these guys are all kind of ex-contractors. So after finishing there, I was like, okay, this sounds like a logical next step to do. I liked, you know, working on a variety of different projects, and especially at this early stage in my career, getting access to all different kinds of things seemed like the best way forwards. So I worked with a company called Splendid, House Splendid, a design agency based out in Covent Garden. I worked there just in a short interim before taking a job in Norway, where I was there for quite a few years as a WPF architect and developer.
So, I mean, I know that you've traveled. Obviously, we met in Norway, and I know you've traveled around a fair bit, and you've worked on lots of different technologies, and you've worked on different types of projects. I guess if you kind of have a speciality, what would your speciality be?
So I guess the speciality would be architecture. For me, I think one of my greatest skills or talents is being able to work on a very large scale. So, you know, even as something as simple as refactoring. So if we have to refactor something across a large project, that was usually the kind of tasks that I would end up with, because I was able to kind of really visualize a large software solution and how all of the pieces fitted together. So it was very easy for me to pull this apart, refactor bits, and put it all back together. So that led kind of naturally into architecting these larger scale, highly distributed, high data volume systems. So I think that's where my speciality is.
So now you're actually involved in blockchain. So you're also the CTO of EOS Dublin. So talk us a little bit about how that came about and what you actually do with EOS Dublin.
So it was a really great story into that, obviously. Sharif Buktila, my partner and CEO in EOS Dublin, he approached us about a couple of years ago, originally approaching Atom to work together to build some distributed applications or some dApps, which is what we call blockchain applications, on this new blockchain that was coming out called EOS. At that point in time, you know, we were so far removed from blockchain, and there was this, you know, new system coming out that looked very risky, and there was a lot of hype around it. It just really wasn't such a great fit for us. So we kind of said that we don't feel comfortable with getting into this. We don't know how much value we can add to this. So, you know, we're going to have to say no to this one. Then sometime later, closer to the launch of this network, then Shree said, okay, how about we do this as more of a partnership, but let's come in and be one of the validators on this network, one of the organizations who are running this network. Now, that was a very different kind of proposition. So now it started ticking all of those boxes of this high volume distributed systems, come in and figure out how to run these and make it work. And that was it. That was, yeah, 2 years ago now, just over 2 years ago.
So how has that journey been compared to, how does blockchain compare to normal, let's say normal projects?
Drinking from a fire hose, I guess, is the best way to describe this. It's such a new world and such a new set of technology that, you know, okay, it's been around since 2008, but it's still quite evolving quite rapidly. It's still a new way of thinking. It's a new paradigm, a new way of solving problems. So it's been really interesting and challenging to have everything that you've known so far kind of been thrown out the window a little bit, and you have to slightly adjust your approach to everything, which, you know, as technologists, I think we really enjoy this, where you get to use some really kind of archaic styles of programming, you know, back in the C, C++ days, where you had such limited resource constraints, you know, the amount of memory you had, the amount of CPU. We're kind of back there again now with this, where you have to be really creative with your programming, which presents a lot of challenges, but it's also super fun.
So out of all of the different projects you've worked on over the years, what have been the biggest challenges you faced?
So I guess biggest challenges, most of the biggest challenges are probably not technology related. It's to do with other constraints, you know, who you're working with, the budget of the project. Those are probably the biggest challenges that we face in IT. You know, from a technical perspective, I guess most of the challenges really come down to large volumes of data. So when you're trying to do stuff with large amounts of data in a distributed concurrent manner, that's where the real challenges come. So you really have to think about, you know, every kind of piece in that system, every actor in that system, how the data flows from one thing to the next, the handoff at each of those. You know, from a performance perspective, from a security perspective, keeping all of those plates spinning at the same time, that's where the real challenge comes in.
And what have you enjoyed the most over your career? What has been the kind of what brought you most satisfaction, I guess?
So I guess satisfaction from a specific project or satisfaction of stuff I've been doing in general?
I think a bit of both, really. So have you had one satisfying project and then in general the stuff that you're doing? Because you do a lot of work on the side as well. What kind of things have brought you the most satisfaction?
So I guess if we're looking at from the project perspective, one that was the most satisfying just because it had, you know, real-world results was working for SmartCare, a company based out in Norway. I was a CTO there. The end of 2000, 2008, 2009. And there we were creating life-saving software. So, you know, there was a simple phone application, work on Android and iOS, where people with chronic illnesses, especially diabetics, overnight your blood sugar drops naturally. So for somebody who's type 1 diabetic who have a problem regulating their blood sugar, overnight your blood sugar drops and you could hit hypoglycemia in the morning. So basically your blood sugar is too low, you're almost in a coma. It can be very difficult to wake up on your own. So this software very basically would have an alarm that went off at whatever time you configured it. If you didn't switch that alarm off within a specific amount of time, it would start phoning guardians for you, people that you had designated and had let know that they might get a phone call. they would get a phone call and, you know, be alerted to your situation. So in the couple of years I was working for that that company, we'd saved quite a number of lives. I think it was 6 or 7 lives in the first year of operation. Wow. That was immensely satisfying, which was really cool, but also terrifying as well, because, you know, I wrote this code. This code is sitting there on the server side. I put it out there. And, you know, this thing's running 24/7. People don't choose when they're gonna fall sick. So it was amazingly satisfying, but also terrifying.
That can
and be. Then, yeah, it was a double-edged sword for sure. And then I guess, yeah, in general, a big part of what I love is education. So, you know, it's all well and good knowing as much as we do about our respective fields, but, you know, if you don't share that with other people, then, you know, what's the point in knowing all of that knowledge? We need to transfer it. So when you're in a situation, whether it's in a team or, you know, speaking on a panel or attending a hackathon, being able to transfer some of that knowledge that you have and to be able to see other people getting really engaged and really excited, for me, I think that's one of my favorite things about working in tech, the passion and the thirst for people to learn.
Yeah, I remember we were involved in that hackathon out in Wilmington, right, in Delaware, during the Delaware Tech Week. That was very interesting, getting the kids to see, you know, essentially kids building something over a weekend and then judging that. That was a lot of fun.
Absolutely.
Well, thanks, Sam. I think hopefully people who've listened to this now have got a little bit more sense about you and you know where you're coming from and the kind of things you like to do. And yeah, so thanks for your time.
Thanks for having me.